The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goins.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this August 20th, 2024. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins, with you for the next 2 hours right here on ESPN 106.7. It's another sunny and hot day in Auburn, Alabama. But man, we have so much to get to on the show today. We've got football to talk about, basketball to talk about. But as we do every Tuesday in hour number one, we have baseball to talk about. That's right. It is our, it's not annual. I guess you could just say weekly. That just sounds kind of boring, though. Our weekly power hour, our traditional power hour with Lindsey Crosby. He'll be joining us here in just a moment. But my new co-host on Tuesdays is with me as well, Christian Griffin, voice of the Lee Scott Warriors. My man, good to see you. How are you?
We are great. Ready for Friday. Ready for all of the excitement for all of high school or football, rather, to officially kick off. I know you're ready. You're ready, but it could also be a couple more days for you as well, yeah. Giving us a couple more days to prepare. We had Warrior Night last night at Lee Scott Academy.
How'd
and
that
was absolutely incredible.
Good.
The band played the fight song, and I got chills. It was the coolest thing ever. It was reality setting in for part of it, but then also just the realization of high school football and college football are legitimately right around the corner.
Well, high school gets started this Friday night for Auburn High, Lee Scott, also week zero of college football, and then we are 11 days away from the start of Auburn University football, which is wild to think about as well. But we'll talk a lot more basketball and football coming up in hour number two, but this is the time every week. We do it since April all the way through the baseball season. We bring this guy in with us, Lindsey Crosby, in the studio as well from Braves Today, Auburn Daily, a bunch of other sites that I can't remember, but those are the two that we bring him in for, Braves and Auburn. My man, it's good to see you as well.
It's always good to be here. There's plenty to talk about.
Unfortunately,
it feels like the Braves keep trying to find things that we have to just break down and discuss on the show. But great to be here. It's just, we're getting in that stretch now where every game matters, and it's just really intriguing across baseball.
Well, we have so much to get to in terms of baseball, and that's what we're talking all of hour number one. So if you're a baseball fan, you know this is the time to tune in. If baseball's not your thing, well, we got an hour to try and convince you. So we want to hear from you, your comments, questions, and concerns. 334-321-1390. That's the phone line number. You can call in at that, 334-321-1390. You can also shoot us a text if you have just a quick question for us, and most importantly for Lindsey, you can get that in as well at 334-784-1067 in the On the Line text box, 334-784-1067. Do we dare start with the Braves? I mean, that's typically the route we go. We start with the Braves, we move into Major League storylines, a little bit of Auburn if there is any. And for yet another week that you join us here in the studio, Lindsey, it's bad news for the Atlanta Braves. Bad news Braves is what we are going to tag this team as for right now.
It is absolutely bad news Braves. In this case, it is Austin Riley, third baseman, out for 6 to 8 weeks with a broken hand. He took a 97.1 mile an hour sinker off his right hand, so not even like the hand closest to the pitcher. It was on Sunday from Jack Kochanowicz of the Los Angeles Angels. Second straight day a Braves hitter got hit on the hand. Travis d'Arnaud was hit the day before. And yeah, broken 6 to 8 weeks. The team signed Detroit Tigers recently DFA'd Gio Urshela to take over for Riley playing third base. He is in tonight's lineup. It was announced literally 3 minutes ago. He has already reported he is in tonight's lineup and will be playing third base and batting eighth. So it's really hard to replace Austin Riley. An all-star at this time of year, it's hard to replace, but you could do worse than somebody like Gio Urshela. And if the organization had to go internally to replace Riley, it would have been worse. So it worked out well that they DFA'd him hours before Riley got hurt.
And again, now that the trade line is up, that's about the only place that you can get a guy now, correct? It's either that or bringing him up through the farm system. So again, it sucks that you're having to deal with that issue, but almost the best case scenario for the Braves being Gio Urshela, who can play multiple positions in that middle infield and especially at that third base spot.
Yeah, I mean, it's the majority of his playing experience is there. His batted ball profile defensively as well kind of reminds you a lot of like a diet Luis Arraez as far as the potential of what he could be. He's put up batting averages close to 300 in previous years, including just last year with the Angels, was batting 299 when he broke his pelvis and missed the rest of the season. But struggled in Detroit this year, his age 32 season, only batted 243. Something to keep in mind, though, is Atlanta was able to get much better results out of both Ramon Laureano and Whit Merrifield after they were DFA'd by their original teams and came over and joined Atlanta. So there's reason to believe, given the fact he's had success as recently as last season, combined with how Atlanta has turned around some other guys, that you could see league average production down the stretch out of third base. But it does hurt. Austin Riley wasn't having the power year that we expected. But outside of that, his defense was amazing, and he was probably the second most consistent hitter in the lineup behind Marcell Ozuna, despite the power not being there. So taking that out is a big hit.
I'm going to put you on the spot, okay, Lindsay, and it's because I have a good feeling you know the answer to this question.
Okay.
What's the count to this point of Braves injuries this season? Maybe you can go either way, either particular like individual players that have gotten hurt or just the number of injuries in general. If you don't have the exact number, do you have an idea? Because it's been a lot.
Every position player except for Matt Olson and Marcell Ozuna have missed games this year.
Well, there you go.
The exact count, and I've got it here. Somebody that I work with, Brave starters are on track to miss 540 games.
Jeez.
This season out of the possible 1,860. It averages 47 games missed per position on the field.
Now, granted,
you don't that Matt Olson's missed nothing. I mean, he's there every game, and Marcell Ozuna's missed none. But outside of that, it's 540 days, 47 games per position offensively that Atlanta should lose this year.
There's something with the AJC saying that Braves players have missed 733 games and counting due to injury. So if you're adding up all of those guys.
Pitchers as well.
You can go down the list here. Spencer Strider's up to 116 games. Ronald Acuna is at 73.
Yeah.
You know, is at 55. Kerr, 55. Waldrop, 54. Those are all the present guys.
Yeah.
I mean, Ozzy Albies now up to 25. Ronaldo Lopez, who actually is coming back and is on the bump tonight, but he missed up to 2 weeks. AJ Minter is going to miss a lot of time. He's at 6 days.
I mean, he'll be out the rest of the season here.
That's what I mean. Yeah. You feel like you just continue to go down the line, and it couldn't have been at a worse time, especially with tonight hosting the Philadelphia Phillies in a three-game stretch.
One of my favorite ways to look at it is, and one I just kind of enjoy, how many different lineups a team can put out. Like, it's just a fun thing to track.
Sure.
So last year, the Braves had 41 different lineups that they rolled out there. This is not where in the order you batted. This is what defensive position you played, okay? And they had their two most common lineups, which was the usual seven starters and or the usual eight when you count DH, and then one of their two main catchers, Sean Murphy or Travis d'Arnaud. They combined for 82 games. The most common defensive lineup minus whichever catcher combined for 82 games. So the most common one was used 46 times. Second most common was 36 times. This year, Atlanta's already used 51 different lineups.
Jeez.
And their most commonly used lineup has taken the field 14 times.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's such a huge difference, man.
The starting, like the opening day lineup, right, with Sean Murphy behind the plate, Ronald Acuña Jr. in right field, all that stuff, that starting lineup has all been in the same lineup one time all year, and that was opening day. Because the way the Braves' injuries have happened, right about when somebody was getting ready to come back, somebody else would get hurt. You know, right before Sean Murphy came back, Ronald Acuña Jr. got hurt. And then you had something where, like, Ozzy Albies was out for a little while, but Austin Riley missed some time. You had something where Michael Harris got hurt. And then, like, right before he came back, Soler got hurt. And then Ozzy got hurt. And then right after that, Riley, like, it's just, you've not had the opening day lineup at all this year. To still be in a postseason spot is miraculous at this point.
I would agree with that. And I want to flash back to a conversation the three of us had a few weeks ago about the injuries that the Braves were having. And we compared it to a topic that comes up quite a bit, especially in football, where if guys continuously get hurt and get hurt and get hurt, but these aren't Braves guys that are pulling hammies and things like that. I mean, we're having dudes getting hit on the hand with 97-mile-an-hour pitches. Like, this isn't normal stuff, and these aren't injuries that the Braves can just prevent or put in protocols to limit the possibility of getting smacked on the hand with a glove. Like, it's just, you're getting injured in baseball plays, and I don't know what you chalk that up to other than that.
Yeah, I mean, it's looking at it right here, you had one oblique strain from Sean Murphy. You had an intercostal strain, which was probably really ended up being an oblique strain at the end of the day. You had a broken toe from a hit by pitch. You had a broken wrist from a defensive play, trying to tag a runner at second.
Yep.
You had a broken hand from a defensive play. I'm sorry, from being hit by pitch. You had a hamstring, which was a dude trying to beat out a play at first base and pulled his hamstring. You had a bacterial infection. Brian Anderson missed 18 days of the bacterial infection. Ramon Laureano had what we called a back strain. They later re-diagnosed as an oblique strain. He missed 10 days exactly, plus more. And then a lot of your pitchers, even the pitchers, have been things. You had elbows, you had shoulders, you had a forearm. I mean, even there, a hip in the case of AJ Minter. It's not been anything the Braves training staff has done wrong. And I think that's the big takeaway, is that everybody's mad about all the injuries. This has been, one, it's been a 10th percentile outcome, but most of it's fluky stuff. There's nothing training staff can do that keeps Ozzy Albies from getting hit on the foot with a breaking pitch.
Right.
Or keeps Austin Riley from taking a sinker to the hand.
Oh, and even by no means is comically used in the word of laughingness, but just comically, the fact that Ozzy Albies gets injured, you bring up Whit Merrifield from the Philadelphia Phillies, and in game one, where he is warming up.
Not even game one, yeah. Warm-ups.
Warming up before game one, takes one off the finger while fielding a ground ball, and next thing you know, you get a tweet from the Braves saying Whit Merrifield was taken into the locker room for whatever evaluation.
He got stitches, and he couldn't defensively play for about a week after they signed him. And it was the very last ground ball he was supposed to get. It was the last. If they had stopped one ground ball earlier, it wouldn't have happened. But that's kind of one of those, like, you can't make up how ridiculous the injuries have been for the Braves this year. And, you know, that's a good way to do it, to kind of explain it. They still don't equal. Let me see. The Baseball Prospectus Injured List Tracker. It's a great little tool that I use. They have Atlanta down as a team of missing 882 games and 1,017 days of the season, which is a stat. I believe you had the same number there. It's not even the worst total in baseball, but I would argue it's been the biggest concentration among starters and all-stars. Like, the Dodgers are the worst. They've missed 1,400 games and 1,700 days, but a lot of it has been pitching, and a lot of it has been depth guys, whereas Atlanta's missed studs. They've missed the MVP. They missed last year's strikeout leader. It's been all-stars and Murphy and Ozzy, Michael Harris, who should be one. It's been impactful.
I know you're a big numbers, a big statistics guy. Obviously, WAR is a ginormous number to look at when it comes to baseball. Is there a specific statistic that can play a negative WAR to calculate the injuries of a team, because obviously the Braves would be very negative in that standpoint?
All right, so similar to that, Baseball Prospectus, on this tracker, they use what they call WARP, which is projected WAR for the season, right?
Gotcha. Okay.
And this is using preseason projections of what the player should have done, because you can't measure off of what they did. They're estimating that Atlanta has lost just under 20% of their projected WAR from before the year to injury this year. And it's almost, it's not entirely, but that war is significantly concentrated in the position players.
I try to do this sometimes. Can you explain to our listeners who maybe are not the most baseball savvy of what war is and how that kind of impacts baseball guys, especially in this injury conversation? We understand it, but just for the people out there that maybe aren't fully aware of what war stands for and for what it represents.
Right. So war is wins above replacement. And the idea here is, I mentioned Gio Urshela, you're hoping he can be average. Right? That is your definition of a replacement player. If statistically he comes out to be right at average with the average MLB player and what they would do. As guys outperform that, you give them positive war. As they underperform that, you give them negative war. A starter is expected to be worth around 2 or 3, maybe 4 war in the course of a season. So 2 or 3 or 4 wins above a replacement level player. A guy who's worth 5 war is considered an all-star caliber player, and a guy who is worth 8 war is considered MVP caliber. So when you look at all this war that you lost, this is, you lost 20% of what your team would have produced. It's a huge loss.
Absolutely.
And I think the number they put on this is it came out to around 9 war lost already, not counting the rest you have. I imagine a lot of that was Ronald Acuña Jr. That's literally losing an MVP, plus some. I mean, it's rough, right? Like, it's just hard to fathom any team recovering from something like that. And yet, they're in a postseason spot.
So just for everybody understanding the war, Ronald Acuña Jr., who had one of the greatest seasons of all time last year, won the MVP, had an 8.1 war. So 8.1 wins above replacement, and the Braves already sitting at 66-58 as a team, you mentioned, have already lost more than that.
Yes, they've already lost more than that. And if you think about it, it doesn't exactly work, but if you translate war into actual wins, imagine adding 8 wins to this team's ledger, all of a sudden you're no longer behind Philly. You're in first place in the division.
Exactly.
And war, exactly. On the free agent market, 1 war typically costs around $10 or $15 million, depending on if you're getting it from a hitter or a pitcher. And so if you think about it from that perspective, you know, you've lost somewhere between $80 and $120 million in production from a purely what it costs to find war on the open market, because you can find average players. Where you win is you find the above average players. Replacing that would be projected to cost you $80 to $120 million.
Which is why I love baseball. It's because you can, not to a perfect science, but pretty darn close, you can calculate things like that, and you can look at it and say injuries really did affect that team, and injuries are affecting the Atlanta Braves right now. We're still talking Braves, still talking baseball, looking at Major League standings, looking at the playoff race. We're getting closer to the start of the postseason. We'll have all that for you and more as we take our final break here in the first hour on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
We continue on with our Baseball Power Hour here on ESPN 106.7. I'm Jacob Goetz. Christian Griffin with us in the studio, as he is every Tuesday, and Lindsey Crosby from Braves Today, Auburn Daily, all sorts of other baseball websites and outlets and whatever pitch else you want to call them, which I'm going to let you plug now. I'm just going to let you do it because you sound a lot better at it than I do.
Right. So, Crosby Baseball on Twitter is kind of the hub for everything. It's a lot of Braves talk there, but like you said, bravestoday.com is the Atlanta Braves. Auburn Daily is Auburn Tigers. Most of what I do is baseball for that, obviously. And then if you're an MLB fan and you want to find out what happened every single day, we have a show weekdays called First Pitch. Monday through Friday, it's just under 30 minutes. Available wherever you get your podcasts and YouTube. We go through all the biggest stories from the previous day in baseball. And a couple times a week, we even release a special afternoon episode. We call it a happy hour episode. Today, we previewed this Braves-Phillies series for about 20 minutes. Should be in your feeds now so that you're ready to go for tonight. So First Pitch, wherever you get your podcasts, and on YouTube or obviously, Crosby Baseball on Twitter is the hub for everything there.
Well, we're going to get into that Braves and Phillies series coming up. Probably the next segment we may start to dip into it here because I want us to have plenty of time because it is arguably the biggest series of the season for the Atlanta Braves. But in terms of just all the standings that we're at right now with the playoffs that are starting in just a handful of weeks, which is crazy to think about. Where does all of that stand right now, Lindsay? Because last time you were in here, just about every race was still happening. There was really nobody running away from anybody in any of these divisions. But tell our people where that stands now.
We have a little bit of running away now happening. The Milwaukee Brewers have an 11-game lead in the NL Central.
Which he called last week as well.
He did.
It's like they're going to run away with this. And in fact, they are. They're 7-3 in their last 10 games. They've won 5 straight. They're playing the Cardinals again tonight. That's who is behind them, 11 in the standings. Cubs and Reds both 11.5. And it's something where like Milwaukee was without their closer and Devin Williams for a good part of the year with back issues. They traded away their ace in Corbin Burns. Brandon Woodruff out for the year with a shoulder issue. And then they lost Christian Yelich just recently to back surgery. And yet they just continue to win. They continue to score runs. They're at their total of 594 is not the best in baseball, but it's like a top 10 figure. And they've allowed less than 500 runs, which was a little bit surprising to me because not a lot of teams are down there. Atlanta's allowed 487, you know, Cleveland's at 485, teams with good pitching staffs, right? But there's maybe 5 teams below the 500 mark. The Brewers are one of them. The big question I have, and I made this point on First Pitch, I think the end of last week, do the Brewers have enough pitching for the postseason? And I think that's the real question because there's a difference in beating the Cardinals or the Pirates in a game of 3 and a game of 4 series where you can, you know, you did get an off day and stuff like that versus facing the Dodgers, versus facing the Phillies. And the Brewers haven't won in the postseason in a while. They've gotten in, but they've struggled to advance. And I think it's because of the lack of top-end pitching. And I don't know if they have the guys this year to do it. But they are running away with the division.
In terms of, I guess, just... And we had this conversation last week, but just looking around these tighter division races, any of them that stick out to you, that whether it's somebody that could blow it or somebody that could overcome it or anything like that. I mean, we're going to talk more about the NL East in a little bit with right. The Braves, with them being 7 games back. But I mean, I look at the NL West. I look at that. I look at the AL West. I mean, there's multiple different divisions that you could still see being overturned.
Yeah, I think I said this last week. I think Cleveland's going to end up blowing it.
Really?
The offense has significantly slacked off. They made some upgrades. They got Lane Thomas from the Washington Nationals. He has bat under 130 since he joined the team. Stephen Kwan's contact quality has backed up a bit. He still has a high batting average, but he's not hitting for as much power as he surprisingly showed this year. Josh Naylor's been on a little bit of a scuffle. And so it feels like Cleveland, they're barely holding on to get over Kansas City. Kansas City is 70-55. They're only 2.5 games back, and Kansas City is just blowing people up on offense. They're one of the highest run scoring teams in baseball this year. I mean, they've scored like 610 runs. They are just Bobby Witt's putting up stuff. Vinny Pascantino leads that team in RBIs, and I'm not convinced they can hold on. Meanwhile, AL West, Houston Astros got this in the bag. They're up by 5 games over the Mariners. The Mariners, in the last, I think it was 45 days, the only team that has lost more ground in the standings than the Seattle Mariners is the Chicago White Sox.
Yikes.
Who are currently 43 games back in the AL Central and 40.5 back of the final wild card spot. The only team to lose more ground than that is the Seattle Mariners. And the stat that I saw was since the All-Star break, they've had something like, they've barely won half of the quality starts from their starting rotation. Like, they have an amazing rotation, ooh, and they cannot hit worth a lick.
The White Sox are going to be, what, the only team to lose triple-digit games this year? They have 96 losses.
We're kind of tracking that way. I think you could see maybe Colorado get there. They're at 79, but even then, I think it's just going to be the White Sox, but at the same time, not many teams are going to win. Nobody's on track to win 100 games either.
Wow.
Weird parity this year.
When's the last find that stat. When's the last time a team lost 100 games but no team won 100 games?
I think they said 2005, maybe? Some weird year. Like, it's been a long time.
Sure. Well, we'll talk more about it, of course, with the Atlanta Braves. They're taking on the Phillies in the series of the year. We have our Baseball Power Hour continuing after this. Don't go anywhere.
On the line with Jacob Goetz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
Halfway through hour number one here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goetz. Baseball Power Hour continues, and Lindsay, words will be hard to describe how important this Braves series is, but we're on the radio, so that's all we have. So tell the people why this series for the Braves and the Phillies is probably, if some people would say by far, the most crucial series of the year for the Atlanta Braves in terms of making the postseason.
I'll tell you, for both teams, actually. So for the Braves, this is by far your toughest test. Nobody at this point in baseball has a winning percentage of 600 or better. It's the last time we've been this late in the year and nobody's had that winning percentage since 1991. But Philly does have the best winning percentage in baseball right now. You've got seven games against them. And this is, I think, the ultimate test of, can you find enough between your pitching staff, between a couple hitters, to win? These games are going to feel like October when you are in Truist Park this week. Like, it's going to feel like a postseason series, because in essence, for Atlanta, it is. But this is the test of, you haven't beat Philly in the last two postseasons. You've handled them in the regular season. You've handled them so far this year. Can you get past them now to keep yourself in the wild card race? But the flip side for Philly, real quick, Philly's having the best regular season in team history. They have lost so far the season series to Atlanta, 2-4, and they've been doubled up on runs, 42-21. And so for them not to be able to get over the hump of this Atlanta team, this injury-riddled, cold offense Atlanta team, kind of makes, I guarantee you, there's players in that clubhouse wondering, what do we have to do to beat Atlanta? And if they can't win this series in Atlanta this week, they aren't ever going to beat Atlanta. If they can't do it now, they're never going to do it.
No, I agree with you. The Braves are 7 back, and in the last 10 days have even jumped a game on the Phillies, which is crazy to say. That's the fact that the Braves are still legitimately in contention. And again, when you're playing a team, it counts as double, to where if the Braves can find a way to sweep and all of a sudden you look at yourself with 4 left in Philadelphia, mm-hmm. What a series that could be. You miss Ranger Suarez, you get Wheeler tonight, Nola tomorrow, and I believe Christopher Sanchez in Game 3. So still a really, really solid rotation for the Phillies, as those guys have been all year. Christopher Sanchez on the struggle a little bit, but still a really nice lefty. What do you expect that offense to have to put up rather than the Braves' defense? Because there are so many missing pieces in that Braves' offense.
Yeah, you have not really hit Zach Wheeler all year. He had a start against you. Was really good to start the year. You've faced Nola twice now, and you shelled him the first time to open the season. He had a quality start. You put up 3 runs in 6 innings the second time. So for me, it's, you have to be able to get your runs off of these starters, right? You have to be able to tag Zach Wheeler for a couple, because you can no longer count on doing it against this Philly bullpen. They went out and they got reinforcements. They've got multiple back-end guys they can mix and match. They're also rested. And so it's not the pattern for Atlanta, and a bunch of their wins this year had been make it through the starter and then punish that bullpen, right? You saw, I mean, whether it was the Arizona series where, you know, they were struggling against Gallen, the Giants series they just had, Snell goes 7 innings. I think it was 7 innings or 6 1/3 or whatever it was. And then they come back, they win twice in extras in that series. And so, or, you know, 1-run victories. And you've got to score against Zach Wheeler. You've got to score against Aaron Nola. And then Christopher Sanchez, who you've never faced, you have to score against him. He's coming off of a complete game on 99 pitches against the Nationals. But the game before that, he gave up 7 earned runs. He had a complete game shutout earlier in the year. The game after that, he gave up like 5 or 6 runs. He is gettable. You just haven't seen him this year. And you're going to have to make it work.
On the pitching side for the Braves, Lopez, Fried, and Schwellenbach are going in these 3 games. And what sucks is you're missing out on Sale Day against the Phillies. And if my math is correct, Lindsay, when the Braves go to Philadelphia at the end of this month, I believe the Phillies are going to miss out on Sale Day twice in a row. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe my math is correct.
As of now, unless they don't make any changes to the rotation, and they've talked about, we're no longer going to manipulate the rotation. Brian Snicker's quote was, it's go time. Like, we got to throw these guys on the regular schedule. We can't skip starts and push guys around anymore. But with Monday's off day, Chris Sale could pitch on Thursday on regular rest. It's just not his turn in the rotation. Spencer Schwellenbach's turn in the rotation is Thursday, and then Sale would be Friday against the Nationals. The thing is, Spencer Schwellenbach has never pitched on regular rest in the majors this year. Every single start he has made has been on at least one additional day. And so they've done this before, especially if maybe game one or game two doesn't quite go how you think it's going to go.
Sure.
I absolutely could see Atlanta say, we're going to flop it. I'm sure Chris would find out ahead before we did, but I could see them saying, you know what? We're going to push Spencer Schwellenbach to Friday, and we're going to throw Chris Sale on Thursday because we've got to get a win out of this series.
And especially if it means, yeah, if you find a way, or if you find a way to win both and you like where you're at, could you make the change later on in the year just knowing that, hey, when we go to Philadelphia, we might need him game 3 or game 4 in one of those not even series deciding games, but a NL East deciding matchup, if at all possible.
Yeah, I mean, every time you have an off day, that kind of gives you a little bit of wiggle room. And if there's anybody you're going to push onto regular rest, it's going to be Chris Sale. He will take the ball literally whenever you tell him to take the ball, and he will throw as much as you tell him to throw. That's just kind of his mentality. He doesn't shake off the catchers. Atlanta's catchers told us he has not shaken off once all year. They tell him to throw a pitch, he throws the pitch. The Braves tell him when he's going to start, that's when he starts. And if there's a guy, you have an off day, like that's the thing, is you don't have any more off days between the rematch next weekend in Philly. So you're going to have to either make it here, make the change here, or you're going to then have to skip him, push him back in the Twins series to get him for Philly.
And so, if that's the case, someone would then throw on 4 days, correct?
If that's exactly. What... You'd have to make somebody else throw early, you know, and kind of eat up an off day if you want Sale to go against the Phillies. So I would like to see them make that change. One, I just want to see Chris Sale throw against Philly, right? But two, I think that's the best way to get him twice against them by making that change.
Which gives you the best odds to beat him. Let's just be real. I mean, Chris Sale's been one of the best pitchers in baseball this year.
Yeah, so. he is the favorite to win the NL Cy Young. And I think as of right now, he is the winner. He's leading the odds. Provided some sort of blow up in his last, what, 3-4 starts of the year?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe 5? Yeah. I can't do math off the top of my head right now. Could be 6, actually, now I look at it.
Looking at the 3 starters for Atlanta, Ronaldo Lopez, Fried against Nola, which is going to be a great matchup, and then you mentioned Schwellenbach in Game 3. Which of those 3 pitchers do you personally think has to have the best performance for the rest of the series, whether that be Max Fried trying to win game 2 to where you win the series regardless, or if it's Ronaldo tonight to try and get a game up, who do you expect has to perform the best to give that bullpen a break or just to come out with the Braves having a little bit of success?
So both Lopez and Fried have missed time recently, and the difference in how the team handled these guys is when Fried came back, he came straight back, no rehab start, and he struggled. And he ever since in those 3 starts, he struggled with his locations. And he struggled. The sequencing hasn't quite been crisp. That's fixable. But the locations have been kind of what's concerning me, leaking out over the plate a little bit more than missing outside, stuff like that. Ronaldo Lopez had a rehab start for Gwinnett last week. I was not there. I got a chance to watch it afterwards. I talked to somebody who was there. He feels good. He looks good. I think he'll be fine. It comes down to Max Fried for me. I think that when you're facing Zach Wheeler, the goal for Ronaldo Lopez is get a quality start.
Like survive.
Yeah. Keep Atlanta in the game for when Wheeler leaves. Like, that's all. That's all you have to do. But Max Fried versus Aaron Nola, ERAs are around the same. They're both sitting in the mid threes. That's a situation where Fried has the ability to outpitch Nola. The question is going to be, does he do it? And I think that's the game where you need to see a little bit of length, especially because Lopez Wheeler is going to be a dogfight tonight. And then Schwellenbach on Thursday has been amazing. You don't know how well Sanchez will pitch opposite of him. So it's hard to say he's got to hold up his end of the bargain. Max Fried has to deliver. He's got to get better with the locations. And he has to be able to execute some of those extra pitches. He's doing that kitchen sink thing. He's throwing 5-6 pitches. But it gives him a high floor because when something's struggling, he can ditch it and just go to something else. Like, he rarely throws that slider a ton right now. If he needs to, if it's not breaking right, he can just swap over to the cutter and throw the cutter. But he needs to go deeper into that game.
It's a three-game series, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. It's crazy for this a series like this of this magnitude to just be, you know, right in the middle of the work week. But I'm not going to ask you best case and worst case scenario because it's a three-game series. Best case is a sweep. Worst case is to get swept, right? Mm-hmm. But in terms of what Atlanta bare minimum has to do to keep the playoffs alive, to keep their streak alive, everything that is built in to this series, what's the bare minimum? What do they have to do in this series over the next 3 days?
The bare minimum is you have to not get swept. Whatever you do, you cannot go 0-3 in this series.
Win a game.
Win a game. Now, to maintain your spot in the wild card and everything, you need to go 2-1. That's the preferred outcome. I never say you have to sweep somebody because it's so hard to do that in baseball. So incredibly hard. But
unless statistically you have no other option.
Yeah, exactly. But you need to go 2-1. You have to go at least 1-2. You have to win one of these games. Because if you don't win one of these games, all of a sudden now you're losing the season series and you have to go to Philly for 4 games. And they're a different team at home. They are 42-23 at home. They are the only team that's won more than 40 games at home, whereas on the road, they're barely over 500. They're 31-28. They thrive in Citizens Bank Park, and you've got to go play 4 games there next week. I think it's a Thursday through Sunday. It's that weird extra game in the series there. So you absolutely have to win at least 1 game, and ideally, you need to get 2 out of 3this week.
If they get swept, I mean, is it over? Is it over?
It's not completely over, but you got to go. I'm not going to say you have to go undefeated afterwards. You have to really nail every single series on the way out if you do in fact get swept.
And is that for the mindset of winning the East, or is that simply the mindset to play into September and October?
At this point, it's play into September, October. I mean, if you want to make the postseason, you cannot get swept by Philly.
We say it's the biggest series for a reason.
And I would say that's pretty big. You look at what the Braves have, right? You got the Phillies, you got the Nationals, you're on the road at the Twins, and then at Philadelphia, that other big series that we've talked about. I mean, the schedule's not horrible down the stretch. You just have to perform in the big series. And you can't show, you know what, in these other series. Like, you've got to show up and play those games, too, against the Rockies and the Blue Jays and the Reds. Like, you have to do what you're supposed to do against those teams, too.
Yeah, and everybody around you in the wild card race and the division, everybody else, their strength of schedule's right there with you. Atlanta, 505 strength of schedule remaining. It's 12th hardest in baseball. Phillies, 504, 13th hardest in baseball. The Mets, 8th hardest in baseball. Arizona, 7th hardest. Like, San Diego, 16. Like, everybody's right there along with you. It's not like you have some great advantage or disadvantage down the stretch based on who you have to play. Like, Kansas City, I like them to win the Central. They've got the second hardest schedule remaining down the stretch. Although, in their benefit, they've got 7 left against Cleveland. So they can always win those games and win the division. But Atlanta's schedule is no harder than Phillies, no harder than the Mets, no harder than the Diamondbacks, barely harder than San Diego's. And right now, you are in a playoff spot. As long as you can win more than you lose, the odds are you will stay in a playoff spot. But it starts with Philly this week. You cannot get swept by Philly.
Simply put, in college football terms, It's the words you always like to hear. You control your own destiny.
Win and you're in, baby.
Which is, I mean, do you want it any other way? Other than just pure domination. I mean, you want it to be, okay, we win and you're in type of situation. And that seems to be where the Braves are.
Well, and this is not a perfect example. But, like, look at 2021 versus last year. Last year was the greatest offense we had ever seen, right? Yeah. They cruised two straight years of winning over 100 games. They had the division locked up incredibly early. They lost in the first round. 2021, they had a losing record midway through the summer, right? Because of all of the injuries, the things they were dealing with, they didn't actually get a winning record. I'm in there right now. They didn't get a winning record until it looks like sometime in August. It was August 8th was the first time they had a winning record that year. But from the trade deadline,
didn't that team go on to do something?
That team went on to win the World Series, okay, because them having to be so good down the stretch meant that, I mean, they had to be fired on all cylinders. And they were the best team. They had the best record in baseball from the trade deadline through the end of the year. And so everybody talks about how, oh, yeah, they won the World Series, only an 88-win team. They played like a 100-plus win team from the trade deadline through the end of the year. But they talked about when they got to the postseason, they were hot. They were feeling it. They were comfortable. The last 2 years, they had days off when the postseason started.
Well, you see teams all the time in sports where back against the wall, you have no other option. It's perform or go home.
Or it's that March Madness mentality of how you're playing your best week.
Sure.
Late April, and all of a sudden you make your way into March as a double-digit seed or an 8-9 seed, and all of a sudden you see them make a run just because you're playing your best ball at the end of the year.
334-321-1390. That's the number to get you through to us. We'll wrap up hour number one and our baseball power hour with Lindsey Crosby after this.
Dip your toe in the H2O this summer with Splash Pools. Splash Pools specializes in design and construction of custom liner or gunite pools. Now offering weekly pool maintenance services to East Alabama, sit back and relax while Splash Pools designs, builds, and maintains your dream pool from start to finish. Check out Splash Pools' amazing gallery of work and customer testimonials at backyardvacation.com. From design to installation on any pools, spas, or hardscapes, dip your toe in the H2O with Splash Pools, your backyard vacation.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, U.S. Tax Shield can help you take back control. The IRS can seize your bank accounts, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Our team of tax attorneys can stop collections and get you protected. U.S. Tax Shield offers a price protection guaranteed quote to get you protected today. U.S. Tax Shield is A-plus rated with the BBB, so call 800-494-6139. U.S. Tax Shield, 800-494-6139. Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, U.S. Tax Shield can help you take back control. The IRS can seize your bank accounts, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Our team of tax attorneys can stop collections and get you protected. U.S. Tax Shield offers a price protection guaranteed quote to get you protected today. U.S. Tax Shield is A-plus rated with the BBB, so call 800-494-6139. U.S. Tax Shield, 800-494-6139.
Curb Technologies helps make your job look easy. Utilizing three important components for a successful project, Curb Technologies follows through with service, customization, and quality assurance. An industry leader in roof curb applications, Curb Technologies partners with national manufacturers like Carrier, Lennox, and Johnson Controls. For more information, give Curb Technologies a call at 334-826-9538. Curb Technologies, they make your project look easy.
When bones get out of joint, or vice versa, the Orthopedic Clinic is here, providing expert care and surgery when needed, wherever it hurts. Hand, wrist, foot, or ankle, back, neck, or hip. Offering minimally invasive surgery and cutting-edge joint replacement. Serving patients from throughout the region. See the sports injury experts for athletes of all types. The Orthopedic Clinic. Call for an appointment. 334-749-8303 or visit theorthoclinic.com.
Oh, Owned and operated by Auburn alumni Andy Senton, the Palms Pet Resort at 203 East University Drive near campus is your furry friend's home away from home. Offering boarding, pet daycare, and in-house grooming, your pet will love the Palms' 10,000 square foot facility, enormous 15,000 square foot outdoor play space, artificial turf for comfort, play structures, and outdoor covered space. Contact them today at PAWMS.com. The Palms, your furry friend's home away from home.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Wrapping up hour number one here on ESPN 106.7. Also wrapping up our baseball power hour. Lindsey Crosby with us in the studio every Tuesday. And look, we're getting into the heart of it. I mean, you're still going to join us even if the Braves don't make the postseason, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's always baseball to talk about, right? Like, baseball's fun to talk
what
about.
What a great sentence right
baseball,
there.
Yeah, there's baseball's fun. You know what I did in 2020? I woke up at 6 a.m. to watch Korean baseball, buddy. I was a Doosan Bear.
The KBO.
KBO, baby.
That was actually kind of exciting. Yeah, I forgot about that. You had like the Korean baseball and wasn't there a couple of other countries that were playing, like doing something like that?
It was actually Taiwan first. Taiwan was doing theirs first, and then Korea did theirs, and then Japan brought theirs back.
Japan, that's it.
Yeah, but like Taiwan was the first one. I was watching like a team named after a company. Like that's how it bad it got for baseball content. It's always on in my house.
That's
man.
Hilarious.
There's always ball to talk about.
KBO, Guillermo Heredia, Braves legend, having a heck of a year in the KBO. But you mentioned baseball is all about fun. The Little League Classic happened this past weekend. I want your thoughts on the Tigers versus the Yankees, where again they make up the field. It looks like Williamsport. What a great event for all of those young kids.
Yeah, I mean, how often do you get to watch kids be that close to their heroes?
Yeah.
And it's not just that the whole ballpark's full of Little League World Series teams, but like the players ride to the stadium on buses with the kids.
So cool.
There's a shot of Jazz Chisholm and a kid. The kid's wearing one of Jazz's chains. They're popping the chains.
Yeah.
And then Jazz sat in the stands the entire game. He got on the broadcast because he's still out with that elbow issue. And he was talking about like, that's his homie. He's already hooked him up with some gear, like sliding mitts and stuff.
You got kids that have like the headsets on for the broadcast that are talking to the players and stuff.
Yeah,
it was really, really.
And the whole Canadian team doing the Soto shuffle with him. So cool, the camera angles and everything.
Like it's obviously not sustainable to do all the time, but as a one-off thing every year, that's got to be one of the most rewarding games for the players, right? Because they get to go back. They get to give back to the next generation. And, like, they even did a handshake line after the game. They don't do that in a regular game, but,
that's
cool. They went out and did a handshake line on the field after the game when the Tigers – it also helps that the game was great. The Tigers walked them off in 10, I think.
Yeah, they did.
And it had some of the best ratings they've had for any game on ESPN all year. It was just an amazing game, tons of fun to watch. I love all of those little one-off things. I went to the Rickwood Field game this year in Birmingham. The Braves are playing the Reds in Nashville
at Bristol. It's going
to
be
Bristol Motor Speedway. I'm going to go to that.
Track.
Hopefully as a media member and not as a fan, so I can get somewhat close to the field where I can see it. But all of those little one-off games are just so cool. The Fort Bragg game they did. I'm waiting for like the aircraft carrier game or something.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, if they can make it happen, sure.
They've done football.
I was going to say, if they can play football and basketball games, why not?
I don't think there's enough room in an aircraft carrier to actually do baseball.
They can make it happen.
It'd be nice, but I don't know if it'll
wiffle
happen.
Wiffle ball or
something. There we go. Well, speaking of wiffle ball, that was the final question. I don't know if you saw. I'm sure you did. Backyard baseball has been confirmed that it is coming back.
Oh, boy.
What are the thoughts on that? I mean, that's the older generation and kids like me growing up playing with Pablo. I mean, what a job they're doing.
Who Pablo had a birthday on Sunday. Happy birthday, Pablo. I'm going to give the credit to Bobby Witt Jr. for having the backyard baseball bat for Players Weekend. I'm giving him all the credit.
Love it. I love it. Well,
I love it.
Man, we always have a great time in our baseball power hour. Lindsey Crosby, plug it all one more time, my man.
I'm on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. You can find the writing BravesToday.com, AuburnDaily.com, and the show First Pitch on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts.
We'll talk to you again next week, my friend, talking baseball once a week for an entire hour. Yes, it is in the books. It goes by way too quick. But coming up in hour two, Auburn basketball news we need to get to. The SEC schedule is here, plus some Auburn football news as well. That's all coming up in hour number two.
following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goins.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway in hour number two here during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. If you missed any of hour number one, you missed a good one. You typically do, but you missed an extra good one today as it was our weekly baseball power hour with Lindsey Crosby from Braves Today, from Auburn Daily, his new First Pitch podcast show that is posted every morning wherever you get your podcast. So he was in the studio with us as we were talking a lot about the Atlanta Braves, about multiple standings and division races around Major League Baseball, because the Braves are arguably in their most important series of the season starting tonight against the Philadelphia Phillies. So we had a lot of conversations about that, lots of injury updates for the Braves as well, and a whole lot more. So that was in hour number one. If you missed any of that, you can go and listen to the podcast. You can find it on our station website at ESPNAU.com. We'll post it there for you each and every day after the show. So be sure that you go and check that out, or you can find it wherever you get your podcast. Here in hour number two, we've got multiple different things to get to. We've got basketball that we need to get to. We have football that we need to get to. And again, in hour number one, if you missed any of it, it was our baseball power hour. And you can find that on our station website at ESPNAU.com. Before we get into content, though, I want to remind you that hour number two, each and every day here on ESPN 106.7, is brought to you by the Orthopedic Clinic. The Orthopedic Clinic is East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika to better serve you. You can find them online at theorthoclinic.com. Christian, we finally got it. We finally have the SEC schedule for Auburn basketball. So much talk has been around the non-conference schedule for Auburn, with Houston and Purdue and Duke and Ohio State and preseason tournaments. Like, there's all sorts of great games in the non-conference schedule, and those are fun. Those are important, and they are crucial to a team getting better throughout the first couple of months of the year. But the games that matter are your conference games, your SEC games, and we now have the SEC schedule for Bruce Pearl and Auburn basketball. We're going to go through this for a little bit here on the show, so we want to get your thoughts on this. You can give us a call at 334-321-1390, or you can shoot us a text, your initial reaction. Which games are you most excited for? Which ones kind of worry you a little bit? Maybe a stretch or two in there that you are concerned about for Auburn. You can shoot us a text in the on-the-line text box at 334-784-1067. Let's start out, Christian. Let's run through this in this schedule. We'll go through it maybe, what, four games at a time. We'll kind of break it up and do that as we go. SEC play for Auburn opens up on January 4th, and they open it up at home. So after lots of road trips and lots of different tournaments and neutral site games and things like that throughout the non-conference schedule, Auburn opens up SEC play with Missouri at home on January 4th. Then, that next week, a Tuesday or Wednesday game, we don't know exactly which day this will be on, and there's going to be a handful of those games, so just be prepared. Midweek game at Texas, the newcomer of the SEC. Then that weekend at South Carolina, and then the following week, the midweek game is home versus Mississippi State. So Missouri at home, at Texas, at South Carolina, and home for Mississippi State.
There's a lot of at and at back-to-back throughout this entire schedule. Again, the first one is games 2 and 3 in the SEC Conference. That's a tough little road stretch. I mean, even just the at Texas game, again, it's a newcomer. You know that they're going to be really, really hyped for it. I was hoping it would be a weekend game. If so, I was going to go visit a buddy out there and maybe go to it. Tuesday makes it a little bit more difficult, or Tuesday or Wednesday. And then at South Carolina, who's definitely riding up the polls as well in the SEC, going to be a really tough stretch there. But nice to get your home game, the first one under your belt in Missouri at home.
Yeah, that'll be a Saturday game to open it up. And then, yeah, midweek at Texas, Saturday at South Carolina, midweek home versus Mississippi State. And then you go into the next four games, which you only get one at home, okay? At Georgia on January 18th, which is a Saturday. All right, so you're at Georgia on Saturday, Tennessee at home in the midweek, at LSU on Saturday, and at Ole Miss the following week.
Again, I mean, it makes it to, especially at at LSU and then at Ole Miss, the 28th or 29th and then February 1st draws the concern. I mean, do you go home during that stretch? We know that was a topic of conversation last year, and it didn't work in Auburn's favor. But at home against Tennessee in a midweek, I'm surprised they found a way to make that a midweek rather than having that one of the games of the week, possibly a game day weekend, especially if both teams are performing up to par. But January 25th is going to be a Saturday.
It is.
It is
right.
Not a midweek. Okay. The Georgia game. So there is a full week bye. That's where we go. So
that's
Georgia the 18th is a Saturday.
Well, every team gets that. You just never know where it's going to
be. Right,
and
that's where Auburn's is. It's that midweek, the Tuesday or Wednesday, the 21st or the 22nd. So 25th is home against Tennessee and is a weekend game, which
that's
is going
huge.
To be a camp-out game for sure.
For sure, for sure. And then, yeah, so at Georgia, Saturday. The following Saturday's home for Tennessee, which is very, very nice. Before, yeah, you hit the road for at LSU, and then you're at Ole Miss. You come home right after you get Ole Miss on the road to open up February. Your midweek game on either Tuesday or Wednesday, Oklahoma at home. And then the weekend game is Florida at home. We'll talk about those two teams here first. That's awesome. Oklahoma at home is going to be a lot of fun. And the fact that this team, this Auburn team, does not have to go back to Gainesville, which, of course, they did it a year ago. Now you get Florida at home. What a huge opportunity that is, because there's no secret on how much I love Florida and that program and their head coach. The fact that you get them at home now this year, which we expected it to be the case, it's still a really big game.
It is. It's a very, very big game, and I agree with you. That whole coaching staff has a lot of respect for Auburn, and I think Auburn is the same way with Florida. You saw it again even in the SEC Championship, just the way that those two teams performed. It was great competition, but afterwards, it didn't necessarily feel like a hatred. But Auburn on the road, especially in a hostile environment with Gainesville, where the student section is on the court, like it is, you can't see the student section, or you can't see the floor on the near side because of the student section. They are absolutely on top of you, and Auburn did not perform very well there last year, so it is very nice to get them at home. And then Oklahoma as well, you talk about the game before, get Oklahoma football and basketball on your home turf, a nice little way to kick off that rivalry.
Then you look towards February 11th/12th. That's the midweek game. That'll be at Vanderbilt. You then go on the road once again, Saturday afternoon, evening. Who knows what it's going to be, but a Saturday.
It's going to be that 1 o'clock game.
Probably.
Always.
Yeah, it'll be a Saturday in Tuscaloosa at Alabama on February 15th. You look ahead after that, Arkansas at home in the midweek, which will be a crazy atmosphere on a Tuesday or Wednesday night. Then you welcome Georgia as well to the Plains and Ole Miss. So you do get a 3-game homestand, the only one in your schedule, the longest homestand that the Tigers will get this year is Arkansas, Georgia, and Ole Miss. That's after trips to Vanderbilt and Alabama.
It's crazy looking at this schedule because it felt like a couple years ago, you could have that midweek game in between the two big games that you could kind of, you don't want to say be put on cruise control, but it didn't necessarily have the same focus that that weekend Saturday game did. And then all of a sudden, I mean, you play at Alabama on Saturday, and then you welcome John Calipari and his new Arkansas Razorbacks to home in a midweek, and then Georgia, who is rising again with Coach White at in Athens, and it's just one of those things to where you cannot take a single game off, and that makes it to where it's even crazier because that Auburn non-conference schedule leads into this. SEC conference play is going to be tough enough. With eight teams that made the postseason this past year, Georgia made it to the Final Four in the NIT. I mean, what a schedule, what a gauntlet that it is. And we're only at the end of February.
Yeah, and that doesn't include the three games you're going to play in March to end the regular season. In Lexington and Kentucky, in College Station at Texas A&M, and home, the season finale for Auburn basketball in Neville Arena comes Nate Oates and the Alabama Crimson Tide. How big of a game is that to end the regular season at home versus Aiden Holloway in Alabama? I know he's not the starter, but
the Fighting Holloways.
The Fighting Holloways, yeah.
First off, I'm surprised that they made this game so late just because of the expectations for both those teams. And I don't know you necessarily put that much consideration into that, but just the fact that you play them March 8th and then the tournament starts the 16th to where you could play them again 4 or 5 days later, possibly.
Yeah, which, you're going to play them twice in a 3-week period.
That could, yes. But with that being said, this is the season finale or the regular season finale for both of these teams. And I'll say it here. This could be one of the most hyped up, one of the most electric games that SEC basketball has ever had. If, and it's a big if both of these teams perform up to par, look good in the non-conference, take care of business in the SEC, this game right here, not only for an SEC tournament spot, but just everything that's coming with this rivalry, what it has been, and what you're definitely expecting to see this year, where it's two of the top teams in the country. Not two of the top teams in the state, not two of the top teams in the SEC, but two of the top basketball teams in the entire country. And Neville Arena gets to host it. I mean, that lid is going to fly off.
I like where the games are. I mean, I like the fact that you wait till mid-February for these teams to get together first. I mean, it gives them time to get their feet underneath. A, get out of their both incredibly difficult non-conference schedules, because Alabama's is up there with Auburn. I mean, they have a really, really tough non-conference schedule, too. This gives them both a chance to get into SEC play, find out who they are, and start playing their best basketball when you hit each other for the first time. But then, yeah, you end the season with them coming to your house if you're Auburn. And this game is typically, you know, Tennessee or Georgia. I think we've maybe seen some South Carolinas in that slot as well. It's just been a little bit since it's been Alabama at the very end, which, yes, we see it every year on the football side, but for basketball, as crazy as it sounds, it could be a bigger deal just because of the magnitude of these two teams and the potential that they have. I would be okay if you got to see each other early in SEC play, like those first 4 or 5 games in January, and then saw each other again in March just to see, okay, here's where we are now, and here's where we are later type of thing. But I don't hate where Alabama falls on the schedule, and I don't mind going there first, especially since they have to come here to end it.
I was about to say, that's the biggest thing that I am perfectly okay with, is the fact that we go to Tuscaloosa first, and then we get at home inside Neville Arena to cap off what Auburn expects to be. I mean, I don't want to put any expectations that there haven't already been put, but one of the most anticipated Auburn basketball seasons of all time.
And I think Alabama's right there with them. Yeah. Coming off a Final Four appearance, you better believe they are wanting what Auburn wanted in 2020 before, of course, with COVID and all that. I guess going into the 2019, you know what I'm saying. Auburn fans wanted the same thing, and Alabama fans are right there with them. Let's get to break. We're going to get to the phone lines. We're also going to keep discussing this Auburn SEC basketball schedule. Plus, I'd like to look around at some other schedules around the SEC as well. We'll have all that for you and more when we come back. Off and running in hour number two here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Let's get to the phone lines here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line, 334-321-1390. Shane, you're first up. What's going on, man?
Guys, how are y'all doing?
Doing good. What's on your mind?
Hey, man, who's your co-host today? I forgot his name.
Christian.
Christian. I like Christian.
There you go. Congratulations, Christian.
You're the first one
over Shane.
All right. Well, you know he's an Auburn fan when he won't even say the name of the other school, and I love that. I love it. Tuscaloosa, you kind of just slid it in like it was like velvet.
He's been hanging around Uncle T-Bone too long.
Yeah, but the way Uncle T-Bone, like, he pronounces it, you know, like, I barely caught it when Christian did it.
Yeah, it's one of those things to where you slide it in for those paying attention, and those who aren't, it just slips right through their minds.
Yeah. Anyway, guys, I don't really have anything else to say. I just wanted to call in and say that, but
okay.
I love the show, and I do have one more thing. Kid, I know it's not, you know, high up on the sports list, but my daughter really loves soccer. And I know we beat Clemson, which is a big thing to open the season.
Yes.
Do y'all know much about the soccer team this year? And if so, then maybe just spend a minute or so.
Yeah.
Not a lot of time.
Yeah, absolutely.
I appreciate it.
Thanks, Shane. Appreciate it, man. Always great to hear from you. 334-321-1390. Yeah, beat number 5 Clemson to open up the season and did Auburn soccer. And they made it into the rankings. And not just into the rankings, they're middle teens. I believe 14, correct me if I'm wrong on that, maybe 14 in the new rankings for Auburn soccer after beating Clemson. And look, that's an Auburn soccer team that played a couple of exhibition games, played a couple of like scrimmages before and didn't do so hot results-wise, but yeah, heck of a start to the season for Auburn soccer.
Yeah, lost 3-0 at Mercer, and then also lost at home to number 10 Memphis 1-0. And so yeah, to be able to kick off your season with a top 5 win, you now host Southern Miss and Coastal Carolina this weekend. They play on the 22nd and the 25th for senior weekend. The first game against Southern Miss at 6:30. I'm pulling up the rankings right now, but I think there's a lot of expectations for Coach Hoppe's team, and it's one of those things where even Coach Freeze on Friday started his press conference by congratulating her, and I feel like that speaks for everything that's happening in Auburn right now, where he can't even talk about football yet, where he wants to give credit to somebody else.
And Coach Hoppe has, I mean, going on one of the best careers and most longest careers at Auburn. I mean, longevity-wise is really, really impressive for not just a coach at Auburn, but just a college coach in general. I mean, they just, in whatever sport, it's just, especially in today's era, right, where college coaches are fired quicker than they've ever been fired before. Coach Hoppe is a legend at Auburn, and sure, I think there are a lot of expectations this year.
And you were right, Auburn did slide up into the 15th spot after beating Clemson.
Mid-teens.
So there you go.
Yeah, so there you go, Shane. That Auburn soccer team, they've got a lot of talent, a lot of newcomers, so keep an eye on them. And Auburn soccer holds a special place in our hearts, Christian, because that's how we got started. A lot of people in our business get started is calling Auburn soccer games over on WGL 91.1, the student radio station.
Yeah, so shout out to Mr. Britt Bowen and all the guys working hard at Weagle as school started back for the students yesterday. It's the first time that I didn't have to make my way on campus for the first time.
Yeah.
Felt weird.
That is a weird feeling. I remember it's been a couple of years since I've graduated. My stepmom sent me a picture yesterday of the day I moved in to Auburn. And
I was like,
oh my gosh. It was, yeah. And I mean, there's people around here that it's been a lot longer since, you know, they've been to Auburn, but
catching strays early and often.
I mean, it's what happens when you step in the studio, but well, we've been talking this Auburn SEC basketball schedule, and it's been released, and so we've known the non-conference games for a while, but want to run through these again and want to start getting thoughts and breaking down tough stretches and segments that Auburn can take advantage of. And look, it's still early, right? It's August. We have some time to figure out what these teams are going to be, but here's what it's looking like, okay? Opens up on January 4th, home against Missouri, at Texas, at South Carolina, home for Mississippi State, at Georgia on a Saturday. You then take a week off. There's your little bye week, right? You don't play in midweek. You come home and play Tennessee. You go at LSU. That'll end the month of January. At Ole Miss, home for Oklahoma, home for Florida, which are two really, really big games for Auburn. You then go at Vanderbilt, at Alabama on February 15th, which, yes, that is a Saturday. It will be a primetime sort of game at Auburn to play in Tuscaloosa on a Saturday. You'll come back home for Arkansas in the midweek, Georgia at home, Ole Miss at home, so three straight home games inside of Neville Arena. And your last three games, which could be the toughest stretch of the season, at Kentucky, at Texas A&M, and the season finale at home against Alabama.
Is it crazy to think that the first 2 weeks of January are the weeks that I'm going to highlight the most? Just from the standpoint, not because of the teams necessarily. Again, you're going to Texas, you're going to South Carolina, who has a lot of hype with their program right now, but making sure that you are not lolling through the first couple games in the SEC schedule following that tough stretch of your preseason or your non-conference thing, because every game is going to matter here this year for those SEC standings.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I think a lot of that depends on how Auburn does in the non-conference schedule, right, with Houston and Purdue and Ohio State and Duke and preseason tournaments. Like, how well do you do? And are you playing well coming out of those games to where you feel like you've jump-started yourself into SEC play? Or are you coming out with broken legs and you know, Band-Aids on your head and like, man. Yeah,
trying to limp through games one through three.
Yeah, thank God that's over. Oh, just kidding. Here's a road game at Texas, game two of the SEC schedule. Like, that's not an easy thing to do. And so you're absolutely right. Auburn is going to have to find a way to look past the non-conference schedule, win or lose any of those games. And, I mean, like we've talked about with the SEC now, there are no off games. There are no off weeks in SEC basketball because whether you think Missouri's good or not, okay, you go on the road to Texas. Well, guess what? Your next game's on the road at South Carolina. You come home for what I think is an improved Mississippi State team. Then your next week at Georgia, but you get a home game versus Tennessee, who is really, really good. You then turn around in your next two-game stretch where you're at LSU and you're at Ole Miss. You play two back-to-back road games. Even when you come home, Oklahoma and Florida are no joke. Do you see where I'm going here? There's no two or three games in a row that are easy for this Auburn team, but no SEC team has that, Christian.
And no, and that's exactly what I was talking about, to where it felt like a couple years ago, you played that big-time Saturday game. You know you're going to Thompson Bowling to play a big game this upcoming Saturday. You have Vanderbilt coming to town on a Tuesday or a Wednesday, and it's, okay, let's survive this, and let's put our focus to Saturday. But now it's almost like that mindset of SEC football where it is any given Saturday. It can now be any given Saturday or any given Tuesday or Wednesday as well.
I think the two easiest games in a row are at South Carolina and Mississippi State. And that's crazy to say.
Right, I was going to say,
that's crazy.
Said with an asterisk and not said with any sort of disrespect to those teams because of we know what they're building as well.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
just when you look at the schedule as a whole, it's...
And the ending of that schedule, again, at Kentucky, at Texas A&M, where Auburn has played terribly historically, and same thing with Rupp Arena, and then you welcome Alabama for the season finale.
I mean, what a stretch. Again, you get the three home games to end February, Arkansas, Georgia, and Ole Miss. And then, as you mentioned, in Rupp Arena, at Texas A&M, and then home against Alabama. Whew! What a way to cap everything off. I know we talked about it a little bit in the first break. But again, I mean, it could be the most anticipated SEC basketball game. Now, again, I am 23 years old, so I do not know that I have the right to say of all time. But of recent times, again, just because of everything that this is building, if these teams perform the way that we are expecting them to and the way that the national media is expecting these two teams to perform, March 8th is going to be a game that the entire college basketball slate has scheduled.
Just looking at it for right now, teams that I would predict to make the NCAA tournament out of this schedule for Auburn: Texas is on there. Tennessee is on there. I'm going to say Florida, because I think they're good. I think they're really good. Oklahoma could be in that mix as well. Alabama, of course. Arkansas, of course. Kentucky, probably Texas A&M. Ole Miss as a possible outlier. I mean, you're looking at eight or nine different teams on this schedule that I believe, just right now, looking at the names and using prior knowledge, that could make the NCAA tournament.
And it's one of those things, too, where how many times, it feels like just about every single year, you have one of those teams that are projected to finish 12th in the SEC, and all of a sudden they make their way halfway through conference play, and they're sitting there at 11-2. They're tied for third. So you're sitting there going, our easiest wins could be this and this. But, I mean, shoot, it feels like every single year there's one of those teams. It wasn't long ago when Auburn wore the 4-14 shirts because that was their projected win totals in the SEC. And did they win the conference that year, or at least they were up there in a very serious competitive spot?
I look at Georgia this year, maybe not to that extent, maybe not being, you know, top two or three in the conference, but a team that I think is going to be much better this year, and you play them twice. That's one of your rotating teams.
Year three, Mike White, old Florida coach. We don't have too much success with him, and again, when you take him to Athens, Auburn doesn't play too well there either.
Man. That's exciting to look at this schedule, man. Lots more to come later on down the road with this Auburn SEC basketball schedule. We'll flip over to football when we come back because sounds like we've got a quarterback order now, according to Hugh Freeze last night at Tiger Talk. We'll mention that and give our thoughts and what that means moving forward for the Tigers in 2024. 30 more minutes here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
Are on the line with Jacob Goins on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 more minutes here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. He is Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins with you on ESPN 106.7. And as much fun as the basketball conversations are, it is August and football's right around the corner. And in case you have forgotten, 11 days until Auburn University gets started. 11 days away from the kickoff of the Auburn football season. High school gets going this week. That's right. Auburn High and Lee Scott, the two radio networks we have here at Auburn. We will get those going on Friday night. Auburn High, you can listen to me, Rob Pate, Jack Hudden over on Wings 94.3. You can listen to Lee Scott Academy with Christian Griffin. His new color commentator will be a part of the broadcast momentarily and a slight delay, but he'll be with you the rest of the way. But you can catch that over on AU100. That's 100.3 FM on your radio dial. So looking forward to both of those on Friday night, pregame 6:30, kickoff at 7. Speaking of football, Hugh Freeze was a part of the first Tiger Talk last night, which that is every week over on Wings 94.3 as well. He had some questions and had some answers last night in terms of the quarterback situation. No, it's not about the starter. We've known it was going to be Peyton Thorne, but there has been a lot of debate because we're never satisfied. And it was about the second string. Who's going to take second string reps if Peyton Thorne, A, gets injured, God forbid, or B, doesn't work out? Who is number two? And Christian, we have our answer. Hugh Freeze told us last night, it is Hank Brown, who will be QB2 for Auburn football this fall.
And he did mention that he felt that him and Holden were both at a very similar spot to where he wouldn't feel uncomfortable throwing Holden into that number two spot. That being said, you can't go into a season with, we'll see who it's going to be when it happens. It has to be a made-up decision, and you have to be completely on board and following everything, and that was kind of his decision with everything. He said the arm strength and his ability to throw the football has been very, very impressive. And we saw that against Maryland. We saw it in the spring game. So doesn't come to a surprise when you hear about the complimentatives about his arm.
Yeah, Hank Brown, to me, it almost seems like it's the more comfortable decision for Hugh Freeze. And I don't say that in a bad way by any means. It's not the easy route. It's not the lazy way. I just think it's a more comfortable decision because of what Hank Brown has shown you and what he brings to this team at the quarterback spot. And Freeze had told us last week that he wanted to tell the guys before he told us in the media and let the fans know. And I respect that 100%. And the little bit that we've had a chance to see these guys, the big one being the scrimmage a couple of weekends ago, when you compare Hank Brown and Holden, Hank was just a little bit sharper. Early on, no, neither one of them were. They were both pretty horrific early, but they settled in very quickly, and both made good throws. A couple of them had a couple of throws that were dropped or made plays by defenses or whatever the case may be. But I do think Hank gives you just a step up, not by much, but just a hair of a comfortable factor to where if you put him in, you know what you're getting. Holden is still slightly more of a wild card. I think Holden's ceiling is higher than Hank Brown, but I think Hank Brown's floor is a little bit better just because he's right there in a happy medium where Holden, you could kind of get all over the place, I feel like.
It feels like you could either get, very good Holden or very, very poor Holden. It almost feels like the coin flip with Bo Nix a couple of years ago, sure, to where it felt like one week you were going to get the next coming of Superman, and then the next week it was somebody that you felt like couldn't do anything right, couldn't get that momentum. With Hank, again, I feel like the ceiling might not be as high, especially when with the standpoint of using your legs, feels much more of that pocket presence type of quarterback, which doesn't 100% fit the scheme of Coach Hugh Freeze. But when you see the talent level with that receiving core, somebody that can get the ball out at a trustworthy level that's going to make the right decision and protect the football, I feel like Hank gives you that number two spot.
In that scrimmage a couple of weeks ago, the one thing that I noticed about Hank Brown, and this was a part of those early struggles, was he was very hesitant to throw the football and take the chance and deliver it downfield. He worked out of that pretty quickly during that scrimmage, but it's something that I took note of. And you would hope that if he were to get in a game this season, whether it be blowouts in game one or, again, if injuries happen or just everything goes to you-know-what and Peyton Thorne doesn't work out, you hope that Hank Brown is comfortable and ready to go to where he can step right into the system that we've been told by the quarterbacks, by the coaches, is a lot simpler, the communication's better, everybody's on the same page. And so you don't want, and this always comes out the wrong way, not that it's a cookie cutter system, but you want it to feel that way for the backup and Hank Brown. In case something does happen for Peyton, Hank Brown can step in and there's very little drop off.
Doesn't feel like there's a beat that's missed.
Yeah, exactly.
It feels like the position is played the way that it should be, regardless of the name that's on the back of the jersey taking the snaps. You talk about Hank feeling a little bit of, what was the word that you used? Hesitancy with throwing the ball downfield. And that's what's so important. You hear so many coaches talk about it, especially early on in games or in big games, giving quarterbacks those early and easy completions, whether it's screen passes or the little dump offs, just to get them in a little bit of a rhythm. We saw Hank work out of that a little bit. And so you'd expect for him to continue to feel more comfortable. And again, as you mentioned, it could be really important getting him some live reps against guys other than the Auburn Tigers to continue to feel more comfortable to where if he is called in on a big spot, he already has that level of comfortability and then confidence as well.
Not that we want to look this far ahead into the future, but if you do start looking at the offseason this upcoming year for Auburn football, if this is the quarterback order that remains and Auburn does try to get a 2025 quarterback in the high school rankings, or if they pick up one in the portal, or heck, if they do both, given what we're seeing now, what chances do you think, and we can both answer this, I guess, of Holden hanging around? I mean, I think there's a legitimate chance that he could possibly get out and go and see and be somewhere else. And that's not a knock on him. And again, not trying to go too far in the future, but that's sort of where my brain goes.
Right. Yeah. Holden was a Harsin recruit that kind of flipped the offense on him a little bit, a different type of style than I think Auburn is expecting and wanting from Holden. A lot of respect for him for sticking around, definitely. Through all of these struggles, I was a little bit surprised, to be honest, that we still see his name on the quarterback roster this year. I was expecting, if he didn't play at all last year, and especially now coming out, being that third string where you were guaranteed pretty much not to have the starting job, for him not to make his way out and go play where he can actually get reps. If you see somebody come in where, you expect Hank to be the guy next year and then Walker to be, again, following this lineup, if he would be that number two guy. If it wasn't Holden, I think you could see him deciding to make that change.
Freeze continued to talk about last night at Tiger Talk. Again, you can catch that every Monday throughout football season on Wings 94.3. He said he was asked a question about the expectations of Peyton Thorne, which has been a very popular question so far this fall. He said, "It's totally different. I expect him to get it right. I have given him the tools to do that." That phrase right there, Christian, I want to stop right there. He has used that several times in the media, on radio, whatever the case may be, I have given him the tools to be successful. And I think he is sending a message to Peyton Thorne.
Yeah.
It's not a new message. Thorne is very aware of it. Peyton knows exactly what he wants and what is expected of him. But I almost feel, and correct me if you disagree here, it feels like Hugh Freeze is saying to the fan base, I believe in this guy, but if it doesn't work out, I'm just telling you I did my part. It's that's how it comes off to me, and it's not a let me cover my own rear end type of thing, but it kind of is at the same time.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's putting yourself in a position to where, as you mentioned, where it felt like you could throw in any quarterback to that position and not see a really, really big drop-off. But going back to the quotes and to the saying of him, we have other guys, basically. There are guys that we have put around you to give you success. It is your job now to go out and be successful.
Now or never.
We have given you, again, every excuse possible up until this point.
And now, they were legitimate, too.
Right, they very much were. But now that you've gone through, you've answered the wide receiver question, you've now answered the question of he now has an entire offseason to learn everything rather than coming in and trying to learn the playbook rather quickly. Those were the two biggest things. You have a very much improved offensive line. Jarquez Hunter is expected to be fully healthy when game one comes around. All of the tools are there. And especially with that RPO type of system, if you get in third and one, third and two, third and three, every single play in the playbook is going to be open.
Was it Friday that I was talking about on the show with you and Uncle T-Bone the fact that I was impressed and respected Hugh Freeze for having an opinion about
yes.
Peyton Thorne and sticking to it
yeah.
and not weathering from that? And I'm not saying that you have to just stick by everything, because I feel like we live in a society where you can't change your opinion on things, but I'm happy that he stuck by it through a lot of criticism of Auburn fans who were like, why didn't we go get somebody in the portal? Where
yeah.
is the portal quarterback? And then, of course, the quote about, right, we're not spending $1 million
yeah.
on a quarterback. And he stood there and took it on the chin. And then to double, triple, quadruple down, he took him to Dallas and took him to SEC Media Days. I love that.
So
I absolutely love that.
Yeah, and I talked about that as well as soon as we found out that his name, because we talked about the three guys, the three captains that were brought with Coach Hugh Freeze, the confidence that that has to instill in Peyton Thorne, knowing that a majority of the questions regarding Auburn are going to be about you, but having your head coach say, hey, you're going to be my guy. You're going to be the one answering those tough questions, and it might not be too much fun, but you're going to be the guy. You get to step on the field first, August 31st, and turn all of those question marks into exclamation points.
In my opinion here on Peyton Thorne, in terms of confidence, there should not be any question in his brain, if you put yourselves in the shoes of Peyton Thorne for a second, he should not have any concerns on the confidence that his head coach has in him. He should not have any questions about the confidence that his assistant coaches have in him. I'm talking Derek Nix, Ken Austin, those types of guys. That should not be a question. They have gone out of their way to tell us the confidence they have in him.
It's exactly what you expect. We've talked so many positive things about those assistant coaches and how those guys are the 100% positive pushers just to get the very best out of them.
Which leads me to believe the players will have the same reaction. And from what we've heard early on, that is what we believe. And what they believe is they have confidence in him as well. The only group of people that don't have confidence in Peyton Thorne, and it's not even a whole group of them, it's just a part of the Auburn fan base that don't know what they're going to get from Peyton just yet, because they're basing it off of last year. But if Peyton can just put that out of his mind, because let's be real, he's a player. He shouldn't worry about what the fans think about him. Go in and play your type of ball. Use the tools that Freeze has claimed he has given you, which I think we can visibly see he has done. There's no excuse to not have a good season this year. And that takes us back to how short is his leash? What is Peyton Thorne's cutoff this year? Because everything is around him, and including the confidence factor, especially from your head coach and the guys around you, man. You cannot put a value on that in terms of words or money. Like, that's what makes a quarterback take that next step.
And you speak about the confidence standpoint. There's no bigger confidence than having your first five games in your home.
Yeah.
What a big difference that could make.
I mean, four of them very winnable.
Right, very much so. I mean, look at Cal last year and how gross that game was on the offensive side of the football. First off, I don't think you expect something like that, like this year. That
God,
being said, if you do, I mean, you could see week two at halftime something like a position change being made.
We've seen it in those types of games before.
Is that as short as the leash is? Do you give him a game and a half? Do you give him two games of depending on how he looks versus Cal, or do you ride him the entire game against Cal? Because that's a game, once again, that I have starred as the most important game for Auburn football this year. People talk about Oklahoma. People talk about the Kentucky game on the road because that can be the difference maker in 7 and 8 wins to get you the so-called over the projection line. But week two, California against, I mean, what you saw last year versus the expectation change that you're expecting to see this year, if you go out and you lay an egg, the fan base is not going to be behind you anymore, and you want to talk about just the, I mean, a blow up on the hype of everything that is being built around you, everything would implode.
Peyton Thorne may have confidence, but he's definitely got pressure because of that sort of thing right there. I mean, that's what that leads to, and it's crazy to say that about a game against California, but I'm with you. I think it is very much crucial, and that would put a ton of pressure on Hugh Freeze too, because then a lot of the fan base will say, told you so.
Yeah.
Peyton's not the guy. He wasn't the guy. He was never the guy. Is what they'll say. And guess what? In that situation, if you're two games in and it's a dumpster fire, then they're right.
Imagine the difference in hype or a difference in excitement levels for Auburn football being 5-0, making your way into Athens, or 4-0, sorry, versus 2-0. No, it would be 5-0.
Yeah, 5-0.
It would be 5-0, mm-hmm. Rather than 3-2.
2-3.
Or 2-3. Right, exactly. If you find a way, I mean, again, that Cal game has so much riding on it, and it's not even widely considered the biggest game of the season. And it's not for a win-loss standpoint, but again, game two, all of the excitement is there. You are expected to perform. And yeah, there's pressure to perform. You're playing Division I football in the SEC. What do you expect?
Pressure on Peyton Thorne as QB1. Possible pressure on Hank Brown as QB2, as Hugh Freeze announced that last night on the weekly Tiger Talk show. We'll take our final break, come back, and wrap it all up here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Winding down here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. Been a great show today, man. If you missed any of it, be sure to go and catch up with the podcast. You know where to find it at this point, ESPNAU.com. We had Lindsey Crosby from Braves Today, Auburn Daily, First Pitch Podcast, was with us all of hour number one for our Baseball Power Hour and talked a lot about the Atlanta Braves, the continued injury problems that they have, but the continued playoff push that they're trying to make that includes a huge series starting tonight against the Philadelphia Phillies. So a lot of that was in hour number one. Here in hour number two, we've talked Auburn basketball with the SEC schedule being released for Bruce Pearl and the Tigers, and up and down, I think, is a good way to put that schedule so far, and we'll have a lot more to say about that as we get closer to the basketball season. And then quarterback conversation, QB talk, is what has been the back half of hour number two. So we appreciate you all being here, and hopefully you've had as much fun as we have, and you can catch the podcast. It's just the show posted on our station website at ESPNAU.com. And speaking of quarterbacks, before we get out of here, it has been confirmed that Auburn will be getting a big-time quarterback recruit on a visit coming up in just a couple of weeks, 11 days to be exact. Deuce Knight will be here for game one on August 31st.
The 2025 lefty gunslinger from Mississippi. He's been locked in with Notre Dame since September 18th, but has received yet another flip prediction, by this time by Jeffrey Lee, to make the flip to Auburn. And, I mean, again, Hugh Freeze and that Auburn team has talked about wanting to get that quarterback locked down, the position, whether it's Juju Lewis or whoever it was. Again, you've seen how how stressful they have been on trying to land that quarterback, because it eases so many question marks. It eases the pain of who are we going to try and get. And yes, you have that transfer portal to throw a Band-Aid on a position group for a year or two. But being able to get a freshman, get him in the system, get him with the guys is such a big, big deal now for high school turning into a college football.
For me, it just comes down to quarterback competition, man. Competition brings out the best and worst in everybody. And that's what I thrive on in terms of in my field, and that's what I think athletes thrive on as well. Because, and I've said this numerous times, with competition, the good ones will show and the bad ones will show, and then you know which direction you want to go in. And so Auburn's going to try and do that. Huge recruit going to be on campus in just 11 days. Coming up on tomorrow's show, what is tomorrow? Wednesday, we'll have Jordan Hill of Dogs 247. We'll get updates as Georgia wraps up fall camp and gets ready for game one against Clemson next week. We'll also have Double D, Daryl Dappert, for Double D Wednesdays. He'll join us in the second hour. And with tomorrow being Wednesday, time to flip over and start previewing week zero a little bit. Week zero for college football starts this coming weekend. Very excited for that. Also, on Thursday's show, Thursdays, the jam-packed Thursdays are back, ladies and gentlemen. Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network, head coach Keith Etheridge from Auburn High School Football will join us, and then Chris Gordy of Locked On SEC. Then Friday, free-for-all Friday, talking high school football because it gets underway on our family of radio stations here at Auburn Network. Christian, always a blast, my friend. Appreciate you jumping on every Tuesday.
Of course, and I'll be here Friday as well. As you mentioned, free-for-all Friday, me, you, Uncle T-Bone, previewing week zero. Going to be absolute chaos. Don't want to miss it.
Reminder that hour number two, each and every day, brought to you by the Orthopedic Clinic. We appreciate them bringing you the 3 to 4 hour on ESPN Monday through Friday. Check them out at theorthoclinic.com. I'll be back tomorrow, 2 to 4, right here on ESPN 106.7. Until then, I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. I'll talk to you later.